grab one of the mics and hand it round to people.
Thank you. I am Margaret Connor and Mrs. Caroline Conroy. We're both councillors for the Kapaparra District Council and we are MCs for tonight's evening. This is the first time Kapaparra has held this sort of debate and it's great to see everybody here tonight. We will shortly introduce our special guests for the evening, but first I'd like to go through some housekeeping matters and get Caroline to do that please.
Firstly, I'd like to thank the Kapaparra RSA for allowing us to hold this debate here this evening. And I'd also like to thank those members of the Safe Kapaparra Group who have decorated the room and put all the work in behind these rooms to make this event happen. There is food available this evening and the kitchen is open till about 8 o'clock. So if you'd like food, please put your orders in now. There's a few of you here and then that way they can make sure everybody gets served. There's also a coffee machine, if anyone wants coffee, right over towards the gaming machine area. Toilets, there's toilets there, and there's toilets by the entrance. There's a fire exit, it's got two short fire exits. everybody's talking over there, yeah, there we are, there's a fire exit and the front door. Now, the RSA of Arts, if any of you would like to stay on after we've finished the debate, and you're wanting to use the gaming room area, please can you make sure you sign yourself in? I think most of you have probably signed yourself in already, but if you haven't, make sure you just sign yourself in afterwards and you're welcome to stay as long as you like.
It's really great that these three MPs have been able to come tonight for this debate. Now, whilst we want a lively debate, we realise that some of you won't agree with everything. We ask you to be respectful. Support and applause is fine. You can please refrain from being rude. We have put together a range of questions from our MPs that have been collected from recent public meetings. Towards the end of the evening, we'll be asking questions from the floor. So can you please wait till the end of the evening and we'll have your questions solely on the speaker city, please. Okay, what we'll do is finally introduce our guest, and I'm hoping Caroline to kick that off, please.
Okay, thanks, Mark. I'd like to introduce the Honourable Judith Collins, our local MP. Welcome, Judith. Judith was first elected to Parliament in 2002 when Kapaparra was part of the Cleveland electorate. With boundary changes, she then became the Kapaparra electorate MP in 2008. Prior to becoming an MP, Judith was a highly qualified and experienced lawyer and company director. In fact, I was pretty impressed, Judith, how many different things you've done. Yeah. And as an MP, Judith has campaigned successfully to force an inquiry into the effect of Agent Orange on war veterans and also called for recognition of New Zealand war heroine Nancy Wake. Judith is now Minister of Police, Minister of Corrections and Minister of Veterans Affairs. Welcome, Judith.
We have a change from our Labor Party representative. Instead of the Honourable Philip Wyford, I'd like to welcome the Honourable Shane Jones. Shane was born in Awanui in the north and was almost a local boy. He attended St. Stephen's College in Bombay. Between 1988 and 1990, he set up the Maori Policy Unit at the Ministry of Environment. Shane spent a year at Harvard University and then returned to New Zealand in 1992. He was appointed to the Treaty of Waitangi Fisheries Commission, which he chaired from 2000. His task was to get about 70 iwi to agree to division of fishery assets, which was completed in 2004. Shane became a list MP in 2005 and was promoted to cabinet in 2007. Re-elected in 2008, and he is now a spokesman for local government, infrastructure, building construction, economic development, and environment. Kia ora, Shane. Now, I hope you picked up that Shane was responsible for getting 70 iwi to agree to the Fisheries Commission. That was a big task in his own. So welcome, Shane.
Our third guest for the evening is the Honourable Keith Locke. Keith entered Parliament as a Green MP in 1999
and Keith has been an activist and campaigner since the first anti-nuclear and anti-apartheid protest in New Zealand in the 1960s. Prior to entering Parliament, Keith held various union positions, union roles. Keith is well known for his stand on human rights and social justice, and one of Keith's more embarrassing political moments was to walk down Broadway in Newmarket in body paint after losing a bet on whether Rodney Hyde would win the Epsom seat at the 2005 election. And I do have to break her up if anybody likes it. And Keith is the Green Party spokesperson for foreign affairs and human rights, defence, police, immigration, ethnic affairs and Auckland Transport. Welcome, Keith.
The ACT Party and the Maori Party are also invited tonight to accept their apologies because they cannot attend tonight's meeting. In the audience, we have our mayor and your local mayor, Tom Penrose. We have a previous mayor, David Gillis. We have Deputy Mayor Peter Goldsmith. Councillor Brett Catchpole. We have apologies from Councillor Peter Jones and Councillor Obama, who's in Darwin. We also have Councillor Owen Pringle. Okay, so that's the end of our introductions. What we'll do is we'll get the motor running and fire our first question at Judith. You can stand, you can do it, you can do a handstand if you like.
Well, I don't think so.
There have been some large public meetings around the region of Papakura, including Papakura, which had 1,000 people attend such meetings. Most council submissions in the Royal Commission and the second bill supported an enhanced ARC rather than a unitary authority. Why didn't the government consult on the first bill and ask the people what they actually wanted?
Actually, the select committee process is a consultation process. I think about how many thousands of people on the first bill, we had consensus across a lot of the parties in Parliament that there needed to be one unitary authority. And in fact, I recall that the Papakura District Council even accepted the fact that there needed to be far more integration, particularly in transport in the Auckland region. And it frankly makes sense, I think, to almost everybody. One of the points that the Royal Commission made when it reported back after hearing 3,500 submissions is that it absolutely said we need to have a unitary authority right across the region. And that's something that the government listened to and it actually accepted it. What happens with government as opposed to when you're in opposition is that matters are brought through by ministers to the cabinet, and the cabinet discusses them, decides on them, and there's a majority vote or consensus. They go to caucus, and then we see about whether or not there are the numbers for it. Those matters were considered. We understood the issues that people like Papakura. People in Papakura did not want to be necessarily part of the one unitary authority to the extent that perhaps it did. But unfortunately, from some people's point of view, the fact is that that's the way it went. This was a problem we inherited, and unfortunately, we had to deal with it.
Shame. Labor started all this off with the Royal Commission. If Labor was still in government, what would you have done differently?
Kia ora, folks. It's good to be here tonight. And it's healthy that there's such a large crowd here. When I was a teenager at St. Stephen's School, we came to Papakura, largely to avoid the two blokes, or the two people calling the same Anyhow, we started off the Royal Commission. We opposed vigorously the bill that Judith just referred to. We would not have continued with a unitary authority without full consultation and without the people buying into it. Although it was our proposal for the Royal Commission to go forth and do its work, we held up the original bill, several months ago, day after day in Parliament, until Jerry Rowley found a constitutional lawyer off the golf course on Saturday afternoon and come in and showed him how to use parliamentary power properly. So I have no doubt ours was not an agenda to push through the original bill. I was on the select committee for the second bill, and any question you've got later, I'll gladly answer. But whilst we supported the Royal Commission, we did not necessarily, we certainly didn't support the process that Judith and her ilk have used to bring this legislation through Parliament.
In this whole process, has the government really consulted and listened to the people of Auckland?
Greetings to you all. I don't think it has really, and why would one of the consultations, as Judith said, through the Royal Commission, the government came out with quite a different proposal than that proposed by the Royal Commission. So there should have been a whole deep consultation over that before it went into legislation. And just on the points that have been raised, you talked about an enhanced ARC. That is a unitary authority, but you can still have underneath that, as we have at the present time, city councils like the Papakura City Council. If you cut them out and just leave the structure with one giant council, with the mayor being all powerful, appointing the deputy mayor, the heads of committees, running the budget, everything, and then at the other end, you've got community boards whose powers are not clearly defined at all. They will now, since the select committee report came out, have a small budget, and they might have some powers to deal with liquor laws and things like that locally, but it'll just be small potatoes, and all the big decisions are going to be made higher away from people, and all the creative things you've done here in Papakura, the Red Hills Cooperative Project with the church, your wardens, your town centre, all of those creative things, and Manukau's got its free swimming pools, and Waitakere's got all sorts of environmental issues, they will not be able to be achieved under this new structure. Thank you.
Tim, we didn't get the answer I would have liked, and I'll be leaning towards, and I'll just be more direct with Judith. Can you just answer, why did we have a referendum?
We didn't have a referendum because the government decided that the previous government having spent $4 million of your money on a royal commission which heard 3,500 people, that to have another referendum on top of that, which we've just had, by the way, the smacking issue, which cost $9 million, we could end up with an extremely expensive process that would take forever and we'd never get the change. I can tell you this, that in Wellington, in the bureaucracy, there is a great deal of fear of in Auckland being a powerful regional body. And there's a reason for that. And there's a reason that Auckland government has never really been sent about, because it doesn't really suit the Wellington bureaucracy. And frankly, if you delay and delay and delay, you just end up with another Royal Commission, another $4 million. That's why we had to make a decision.
Chairman, doesn't that ignore the fact that Auckland is a powerful state for the whole community?
And we'll come to those at the end of the meeting.
All right,
the marriage dates were one of the more contentious aspects of the reform. Romney Hyde threatened to resign. There was a number of submissions to the second bill supporting marriage dates. Shame. Labour supported the marriage dates. The government has left it to the Auckland Council to decide. Was that the right thing to do?
Folks, the Labour Party supported Māori seats, actually going back before this exercise, and in the days of the Longy government, actually created two Māori seats in regional government back then. They were disestablished in Warren Cooper's time, and we supported their re-establishment this time. We supported it on the basis of the Māori parliamentary seats. There was a proposal that the Tainui and Ngāti Whātua and the various other tribes had their own seats. Our party did not support that. We supported one person, one vote, and if you're on the Māori roll, a Māori candidate, if you're on the general roll, etc., for Auckland governance purposes. I actually think that the government got it wrong. I do think that the Māori Party came up with a compromise that was so complicated it would have worsened the level of Māori political wrangling, actually not simplified it, etc. So we do have a background in having had these seats before, but there's one thing we did not support, and that is the notion of a Māori representative being appointed from the Māoris. And I personally did not support it, as I feel that that's good for our Māori world, but it's not the proper way to go for local government democracy.
Thank you.
The Greens also supported Māori seats. Has the government got it right? And you might like to comment also on the Labour Party's position as well.
Yes, the Green Party supported Māori seats. We do live in a bicultural nation, and we value the Māori involvement in our society. And it was interesting at the Select Committee that virtually all the submitters, right, left, business, Māori, non-Māori, virtually all of them supported Māori seats. It makes sense. And our view was that Māori should determine what sort of seats, whether they're directly elected, as Shane suggests, or whether there's some any seats. That composition could be worked out by Māori. We weren't going to dictate that, but the principle is important, and it would really add, you know, if you have broad representation, Māori representation, that adds to the mix, adds to the increase of decision making. And you, Dirt, here in Papakura, with your Māori ward in North West, would be very engaged with the Māori community here, so I think it would fit.
Thank you. Judith, the government decided not to support the Māori seats. Are you able to say why?
Actually, I didn't support Māori seats when it was proposed in Papakura here some years ago, and nor did the vast majority of people who voted on it. There's a reason for that. I don't believe in tokenism, just as I don't support seats specifically for women. I don't support seats specifically for anybody other than those people chosen on merit. And what we do, however, accept is that the region, the Auckland region, may well itself decide to bring in Māori seats, and we think that is something which they should decide to, just as Papakura decided not to some years ago. But I think you can also accept that Papakura has made a big effort to engage with the local Māori community, and in fact, not only, I mean, the Māori waters were mentioned, but actually the police engaged very well there too. But in fact, with the advisory groups and the Kaitiaki group, that is all initiative that's taken place without having specific seats for Māori. So, no, I don't think we should have it.
Thank you, Judith. Keith, the government are expecting the regional mayor and council of Twente to have one vision, one voice for Auckland. Is this really going to happen?
Well, it would be nice to think that it would happen, although we live in a democracy where people have different visions, and unfortunately, as I referred to before, the vision of the mayor will tend to predominate because the mayor, he or she, and it looks like it might be he, the way things are going, with the two candidates being male, that the mayor will have the, as I say, the power to appoint the deputy mayor, all the chairs of the committee, run the budget, everything. The rest of the council will be a bit sidelined. Plus, the mayor will be elected on an across Auckland basis, and to win on a across Auckland basis, you need a lot of money, so it would tend to bend the mayor towards a rich member of the community. In fact, it will be the whole thing being more separate from the people. Is going to make it easier for people to buy elections. They're in for the money and advertising, get known across the big wards or the big city, and the council would tend to be dominated not by ordinary people like in this room, but by those that have a lot of money. And I think, as I said, at the other end of the scale, the community boards won't be very powerful at all. And the other thing I think is that the mayor might be working, if it's more conservative, they're working hand in glove with the conservative forces in Wellington, because what we've seen at the moment is that Wellington tends to override the decisions that are being made in Auckland, particularly around transport. We had the other day, the Auckland Regional Transport Group comes up with ten priorities, I think, seven of which were public transport, and then the government came back
and said... Regional Transport Group. Sorry, Ken. Judith. The mayor is expected to be the second most powerful politician in the country. Does this concern you and your government?
Well, I think it will concern some people. At the moment, we're looking at two declared candidates, Len Brown and John Banks. I would have thought that there's certainly no particular reason to think that one is going to get it over the other, and there may well be other candidates, of course. But the fact is that you can't govern from Wellington for everybody if you don't actually engage with the biggest region in the country. And one of the things, of course, is that the mayor will have some real power, because one of the things I think that people find very frustrating when they become a councillor in a district council like this, or in Manukau or anywhere else, is that there is really very little power for a mayor, that they become very much controlled by the chief executive. And this is actually about giving some real power to the elected people.
Shane, the ward boundaries for councillors are likely to be larger than parliamentary electorates, and it's going to be pretty expensive to campaign. Can we expect the diversity of Auckland to be reflected around the council table?
Just to try and answer that, you're either going to have a mayor or a governor. You're going to have the governor of Auckland, or you're going to have the mayor of Auckland. If you end up with the latter, you'll curse the day that this legislation was ever ran through the House. Now, the wards obviously are too big. We did not support a limited number of wards. Actually, we were very interested in the original proposal of six councils and a large regional function, but that's now history. So the commission has got to determine the final boundaries. We do feel we would have been better off with a range of wards that weren't so small that they became toothless and powerless. But the difficulty that we see is that unless you get the size right, the CEO will always drive the bureaucratic power and the actual people in areas such as where I'm close to where I'm, Rodney, Papakura and Franklin, will be disenfranchised because the power in this new super city will be down Queen Street. Go with that.
Big savings were signalled in these reforms. Now we're hearing from some commentators that they're suggesting some communities may experience 15-20% rate increases. Papakura currently has the lowest rates in the region. Are people in Papakura likely to experience big rate increases?
I'm actually not sure, Carolyn, where those commentators got their figures from. In fact, I'm assured that we are far more than likely to get better service without the sort of cost that we currently get. I think, too, it's also fair to say that Papakura rates are pretty low, except that you need to add on the water rates as well. And that's something that's not always in the equation when people are doing the calculation. We've been assured there are very good savings to come to the region, and that's exactly what we expect to come.
Shane, has the government overpromised on these reforms? And Kelly, do you think it can deliver on the savings proposed for rates?
We asked numerous questions in Parliament and made large challenges to the National Party politicians. Stand up and tell us, number one, how much it's going to cost to collapse local government into one super council. And secondly, tell us where you'll find the savings and what will be the level of savings. We have never had one lucid answer yet. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that this is going to be an enormous exercise, and because the elections have to go down by October 2010, there's a massive amount of activity taking place, which is going to lead to dislocation. You just can't do something this large without there being casualties. It would have been possible to possibly have move at an election for the super city to a different point in time. I personally feel, because we've never had any quality information from Rodney Hyde or other ministers to date, you are foolish to imagine that your rates are going to go down.
I'll ask a question.
It is very strange that when you've got a government that's cutting all over the place and they've cut $30 million off night classes affecting every community in the country, and they say, oh, it's because it costs too much, we've got to cut here and we've got to cut there. And here's an exercise that's costing millions and millions. And Shane's right. We asked Rodney Hyde, you know, week after week, Papakura gets its own rate, so it controls its own destiny. That won't happen under this system.
Thank you, Pete. Put the necessary reforms have occurred whilst leaving communities such as Kapakura pretty much business as usual.
Shane's just mentioned it before. The Labour Party agreed the Royal Commission that there should be 6 councils. On that proposal, Kapakura became part of Manukau. And nobody in Kapakura told me that they wanted that. And that was the proposal. That's what your council told me they did not want. You wanted local boards, you wanted to have a control over your own destiny. You didn't get everything you wanted, but you've got your local boards. And your local boards are elected from your local people. You have an opportunity with the 20 to 30 boards to make sure you get your own board and that you're not part of Manurewa, which was what the council at one stage was promoting, parts of Manurewa. Now, frankly, I don't think that that's such a bad deal compared to what you could. At the moment, we don't have proper stormwater in this city. We don't have all sorts of things that we should have. We have, if you go down the main street, I'm not seeing actually the vibrancy and the regeneration that we would be expecting to expect after your rates being paid and doing it up. And that's the sort of thing we should be doing. We should be focusing on that rather than focusing on something which we have been landed with. I'm quite happy to say to you that I think we can get a better deal for people of Kapakura when we have a council in terms of your electorates, your people who vote in the council, your ward, but also your local board who actually have some say and who are not controlled by their staff.
One of the drivers for the reforms has been the desire to improve Auckland's economic performance. Will this legislation do it?
The short answer is no. And one of the reasons is that to improve our city, we need to... Have you got a specific public transport question?
Yeah, that's coming up,
yeah. I was going to talk about public transport as an important driver of economic performance. But I think if you look at the other economic drivers too, I think Shane's right that in setting up the Auckland Regional Holdings and the Auckland Transport Agency as sort of independent really of this new council, that can do two things that are bad for economic performance. One, it can set them up for privatisation of the water or privatisation of the ports, whatever it might be, the big assets that are used to benefit Auckland at the moment. And on the other hand, that can mean that the people of Auckland through their council cannot really stave off pressure from Wellington. Because what happens at the moment is Wellington says, well, we want this for transport, and they really impose their will on what is now the Auckland Regional Transport Authority, for example, and whatever priorities it has. So I think that's going to be bad for Auckland's development.
Thank you. Judith, the cynics would say that these reforms have all been about making sure there's sufficient funding for the Rugby World Cup. Would they be
right? Actually, Carolyn, that's a new one on me. I haven't heard that before. And I have to say that's fun. Because, frankly, the Rugby World Cup is being held right throughout the country. Dunedin, Christchurch, they're all having it, Wellington, they're all having their bit of the Rugby World Cup, Hamilton and Napier. So I've got to say that you have to be not only cynical, but that's a really, really new idea.
Now, Shane, we've got another new idea coming up too. Given agriculture is the backbone of the New Zealand economy, are we expecting too much from the Auckland economy?
Powerhouse of the country? Well, as a member of the Golden Oldie Parliamentary Rugby Team, I'm all for the World Cup.
Do you know about that, Shane?
I shall report your unwise remarks to Murray McCullough. However, a lot of Auckland, let's be honest here, a lot of Auckland actually transports and reprocesses produce from other parts of New Zealand. And one thing that would be good to come out of the restructuring of Auckland is whether or not more activity can go out of the centre of Auckland and the manufacturing zones where themselves, the land, etc., is largely owned by Aussie companies now. So if there is a way to produce goods and services better, that's not a bad idea. But will it displace the $19 billion worth of Fonterra, the excess of $1 billion from fish, trees, etc.? No, Auckland's predominantly a service economy. And it's sharp, and it can be angry. After all, it was colonised originally by the merchants from New South Wales. So you know what that came with, manacle marks on their legs. So you're always going to have that pretty wild commercial bent to Auckland. The key point I'm making about the economic governance of Auckland is that less small communities, like in the far north and Rodney and yourselves, have decent powers in your local councils, you are surrendering power to the corporates down at Queen Street. Make no mistake about that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Shane. Now looking at your individual portfolios. Judith, from a policing perspective, how will the Auckland Council maintain good networks for the police and ensure the needs of local communities are recognised and addressed, such as Papakura? You've seen and heard the relationship that our mayor has with the police and what happens there. How are you
going to talk about that? My note is that no matter how good our relationship of our current mayor is to the police, it is not nearly as good as mine as the Minister of Police, frankly. So let's be frank here. We've got 9 extra police in Papakura since this year, since I became the Minister. 9 extra. 24, if you put Mangareva and Papakura together, actually, and delivered by me. And sorry?
Half the station shut up the week.
No, I didn't think so. And that was shut under the previous government, actually. And it's fine. It was. So I think that what you'd want is your local board to be properly organised so that they liaise with the local police, just as the council should do now, just as the MP does now. That's what happens. And as for your local councillor from the ward which Papakura will be part of, we would expect them to be working in with the police and understanding what's going on as well, and attending those local board meetings so that they get the feedback on what the, these people are going to be voted in by you, and they are going to be answerable to you, and they would expect to be doing that. They should have more time to do that.
How many?
Well, it depends on what the local government commission says, and it says between 4 and 9 in the legislation. And those will be people will be able to be dedicated to looking after you and your work just as they do now, except probably better.
I can't see a
woman
car driving around at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you, Judith. Shane, is the environment going to benefit from these reforms?
Several weeks ago, the Minister for the Environment. You know, politics is about not only cracking your opposite number over the nut occasionally, but giving a bouquet of 3. I actually do believe that the regulation around the Resource Management Act, etc., has got 2 burdensome for councils. I was the Minister of Building, and indeed your own council, along with other councils, came to see me and said, look, can you cut us a bit of slack? The level of finicky detail we're expected to operate with is causing us to take too long and to be too risk averse about letting ordinary citizens do what they want with their houses, etc. So I think that there is scope when you restructure all these councils into providing a more efficient process for releasing and allocating consents. If that doesn't happen, then we have definitely cocked it up super tight. Because that, you've got to imagine, is going to be one possible positive outcome. But at the end of the day, unless these local councils, local boards, have real authority, people with time and adequately resourced, you're going to surrender power to a bureaucrat was going to be the super cop of the super city run by the super Auckland president. So go for big powers at your local area. We would have given them a completely different approach, as I said, with these local boards. The more you create, potentially weaker you make them. Give them scale and size, which is one of the reasons, amongst many others, we didn't support the bill that Judith and others ran through Parliament.
Thank you, Shane. Keith. Transport is seen as Auckland's number one problem. Is the transport agency proposed in this legislation going to fix the transport problem?
I don't think it is. First of all, I'll say just my role as a police space person. I think the Papakura police station should be open.
This is not a correct statement, I've got to be fair. The police station does not close. It's open 24 hours, 7 days a week. And we need to be clear on that, because we don't want people thinking that the police station is closing. It is open 24 hours, 7 days a week.
But I think we're okay, because there's no criminals on the street. I don't think it will deliver, because when I came here tonight, I walked on a bridge over the motorway on my way to Newmarket Railway Station, catch the train out here, and there looking both on this bridge, looking both ways up the motorway, cars, stationary, as far as the eye could see, every direction. And it's pretty obvious that what we need is public transport, and that has to be the priority, the overwhelming priority for expenditure. Particularly on the rail, particularly to electrify the rail. The train I came out in would have come out much quicker, smoother, a lot more people on it if it had been electrified and if the services had been a bit more frequent. Because if you can make public transport cost effective, frequent, comfortable, then people will travel. They can get there cheaply and quickly. So that's what we've got to do. Now, what's happening now? With the Auckland Regional Transport Authority, ARTA, the government's just overriding completely what it said. And this will happen under the new Auckland Transport Agency. There's only going to be two representatives from the Auckland Council on this new Auckland Transport Agency. The government will still just say, sorry, we want the Pūhoi to Wellsford motorway at the cost of $2 billion, forget about the electrification, forget about the integrated ticketing, which is exactly what they're saying now. So I don't think the new structure is going to benefit transport. There was a golden opportunity to design a system that did, but this one, thank you.
Do you agree or disagree with what he had to say on the transport?
No, we do actually accept that we need to have public transport. I think many people in Papakura often use the train. What we don't have is as much of a bus service as we should have. The fact is, though, the trains can only go from one place to the other. They can't shift around, go around different areas, and that's one of their big issues in the Auckland region, is that many people, and if you go down the main street of Papakura, go into the shops there and ask people where they come from, many of the people working in our shops actually live in places like Waitemata, or places like that, Waitakere, the North Shore area. They're actually often in other regions, because Aucklanders, Great Aucklanders, tend to shift an awful lot around. And that's one of the problems with trains, is that they're good from getting from here to the university, into town, into the city, into Newmarket, whatever, out to Pukekohe, but that's about it. They're not going to take you to Waiau Pa. They're not going to take you as well to, say, the airport at the moment. And so it's really important to have roads and trains. But, you know, public transport, buses are the biggest area of public transport people use, and they run on roads. And you've got to have roads. And you've got to have roads that work. And that's one of the big issues that I think all the major parties did agree with, is that this is one of the big transport issues for us all.
Thank you, Jerry. Shane, it's only fair, if you want to comment on the transport issue?
I have to find somewhere where I kind of agree with Keith, but I vigorously disagree with you. But in actual fact, Labour had as a key plank, and obviously we never delivered on it to the satisfaction of the electorates here, because that was one of the reasons throughout the border Auckland area that was given, was why our time had come to go and have a boy in opposition. The key point, though, is that we exhaust an enormous amount of economic resources through our infrastructure being clogged. The Labour Party, and Darren Hughes is our spokesman, is still very much committed to expanding the public infrastructure, but the reality is you and I, our kids, our aunts, our uncles, our parents, brothers and sisters, love the independence of hopping in our own locker and being able to travel at our own pace and in our own style. Now that's just embedded as a part of being a Kiwi. So whilst we're supportive, big time, of public infrastructure, etc., the reality is our roads must continue to evolve, be invested in until such time we decide to be like Japanese and want to travel on trains and not in our own whoppers.
Thank you, Shane. Keith, it's only fair if I ask you, is the environment going to benefit from these reforms as well?
I don't think so, because if you get this council taken over by the banks group, which does represent fairly wealthy business interests, they are the people that are tending to put development, their own developments, ahead of protecting the environment. That's just the history of it. There is also this Environmental Protection Agency that the government is bringing in, which is going to take away some of the powers that the ARC previously had to deal with environmental planning, environmental issues. So I think we won't really benefit. And we've already seen the government's attitude over the one aspect of the RMA, and that is allowing people to chop down trees sort of willy-nilly. I think there's been a lot of opposition to that in terms of us protecting the trees that are really such an important part of Auckland's suburban life.
Thank you, Keith.
Questions for Shane first. Labour supported an STV voting system for the Auckland elections. Why was Labour keen on STV? Well, after it was evident that we were going to miss out on the Māori sect as improving diversity, the view that we formed was that if you have these boards that are very large, and you had 20 members, you're really going to need serious dough to stand in these elections, even if they are multi-member ward. Well, us as politicians, we spend probably $8,000 to $12,000, in all honesty, on running a campaign to get into Parliament. We're allowed to spend up to $20,000. Given the amount of wealth that's at stake in the new super city, we are talking about $28 billion worth of resources, a third of the country's population. We felt that a move away from first past the post would improve the prospects of diversity. We were challenged, and that's part of being a loudmouth in Parliament. We were challenged as to whether or not we were overcomplicating the voting system, etc. We've come for the view that some health boards, etc., have used an alternative voting system, and despite the post office's best efforts to mangle the counting process, they haven't worked out too badly. But that was our thinking. We lost, we're stuck with what we've got, but we do have deep concerns that if you've got these big wards well over the number of people that would be voting for Judith or other candidates in the seat, then you need bucks and you need time, and that is going to exclude a lot of people who have to spend every living, thinking day of their life to work for a living and pay for last week's bills.
The Greens also supported STV voting system. Do you think the Select Committee were correct in thinking people would be confused?
I don't think so, because SDV is just ranking the candidates on the ballot paper, 1, 2, 3, 4, however many it is. That isn't a very difficult process. One of the problems in recent elections has been there's been two systems on the ballot paper. You've had the district health boards by SDV, and then you've had the other positions by first past the post. So people have got confused. In a place like Wellington, where they have SDV for the council, for the mayor, for the health board, it's all straightforward and they like it. And the advantage there, that would fit with your community, is that there are a number of candidates running for mayor in Wellington. Kerry Prendergast, of course, has come out ahead. But with SDB, it means that she has to get 50% of the vote, because what happens is they have a first vote, that they count all the first preferences, and then the people down the bottom drop out, and their vote is given to their next preference. And so Kerry Prendergast gets them the 50% of the vote. We could easily, it may not happen in this election, it's just a straight run-up between Brown and Banks, but there could be another election where, say, there's six strong candidates, and the winning candidate wins with 23% of the vote, or 19% of the vote. You know, that could happen, and that wouldn't be democratic. And I think if you've got these multi-member wards and you use SDV there, it enables minority forces that you know haven't got all the money necessarily to get in, because of the threshold system of multi-member wards. That if you have a ward with four representatives in it, you need to get 20% of the vote, that's the threshold, to get one person in. So you get much more diversity, you get more ethnic diversity through SDB, because at the moment, if you've got a what people might consider a funny sounding name, you don't get much of a chance. But if you had SDB, I think there'd be more representation across the board.
Thank you. The government opted for first past the post. There have been elections, and Keith picked up on it, where more people have voted against the candidate than for them, and yet they still won the election. How will First Past the Post really ensure that the mayor and councillors have a clear mandate to represent Aucklanders?
Well, I think that's a good question, but the fact is that FTV, as Keith was explaining it, was confusing even me. And actually, it's part of my business to know about these things, and I do. Many people complain about the complexity of STV in the District Health Board elections and the fact that it seems to take forever for the results to come out and they're not quite sure who they voted for in the first place. But actually, first past the post is a very clean, simple system. If we have a clear winner, then I think that's good for the city. If the council wants to change the way it does its elections, right now they can actually do that anyway under the local government provisions that are already there and will stay. So if the people of the area decide that they want to shift to an STV way or an MNP way or whatever way, then they can do that. But to start off, a first-class post system, I believe, will deliver the biggest outcome for people voting, because certainly ever since we've got MNP, in the general election, the voting has gone down, not up.
Thank you, Judith. Keith, do you think Aucklanders are right to fear privatisation agenda?
I think so. The national government says it's not going to privatise things in its first term, but in a couple of years' time. If they get re-elected, it might be on the agenda. And will these assets sitting in outside of the Auckland Council and Auckland Regional Holdings and in the Auckland Transport Agency, then it's quite easy for the government to say, well, we've got all these operations running more or less at a profit now, let's just hop them off to some of our mates. And that's what's happened before in New Zealand in the privatisations of the 80s and 90s. There's been a bit of a slowdown. People might have forgotten about it through the period of the Labor League government and this period of National, but it could easily come back to hit us. We had a big campaign to stop the sale of the ports in the early 90s. We were successful. Those ports have put a whole lot of money from their profits into public transport in Auckland. We don't want them sold off.
but this structure will make it easier for them to be sold on.
Thank you, Judith. Has the legislation gone far enough to protect Auckland's public assets from privatisation?
Actually, in Papakura, of course, a lot of our assets were sold off before when Mayor Hawkins was here. I think people need to remember that. So there's not very much left. The fact is that there's no privatisation agenda. The bill relating to assets is actually the third bill, and that is going to be made public, obviously, very soon. So it's not. I'm not aware of any privatisation agenda. Frankly, I would have thought that most people here would have realised that water was already privatised in Papakura years ago. Lots of other things already were sold off, yes, overseas. But actually, people in Papakura tend to think that the water rates aren't as bad as other places. So it can't have been such a bad thing.
Thank you, Judith. Shane, the Honourable Phil Poitford tried to get a bill through Parliament for a binding referendum before public assets could be sold. Do you feel there's a real risk of assets being sold?
Probably one of the key areas that does distinguish the Labor Party from the National Party is really our approach to privatisation. Now, Judith is correct. There is no overt agenda in relation to Auckland's commercial assets that either she knows of, and we certainly haven't been formally told about that. But Judith, the taste and the appetite for privatisation looms large. You're doing it in the prison system, so don't say that your party is not interested in privatisation. That's the first thing, just so we can dispose of that small inaccuracy. Secondly, the bill that Phil Twyford promoted, it did not secure support. And now just look at whose culture will be the foundation culture of the super city. Won't be the culture of the Papakura area or Manukau. It will be the culture of Auckland City. That is the culture. Now that is a culture that in the past has sold pensioner housing, is constantly looking for ways to privatise ports and other infrastructure assets, etc. So you have to imagine that once that kind of culture takes root and its stewards gain power, then privatisation, if they can't do it in Wellington, they'll do it in Auckland. Mark my words.
Thank you, Shane. We're going to turn over to the audience very shortly, but I unfortunately got the big curly question. Judith, there's two questions to go. The first one is, there's been criticism and noises made that you've been rather silent over protecting Papakura inside of Parliament. Would you like to comment on that, please?
Yes, I would actually. I might have the opportunity to deal with that, because it's extremely difficult to deal with allegations when you're actually already working in cabinet to get the better deal. When the super city, let's call it that, the Royal Commission came back and said that Papakura was going to disappear as Manukau, the fact that we had to do something about that to make sure there was a Papakura. And having met with the council, I then met through with the cabinet about what it is that we could do. We now have a local board, which will be at least here in Papakura. We've heard from Shane, they want them bigger in the Labour Party. We want them smaller. The reason we want them smaller is we actually want to make sure that Papakura has its own voice and is not swallowed up into Manurewa, which is what the plan was. Now, when we say about outside, well, actually, in the House, in the Parliament, through the bills, and I would have thought the people who have been cabinet ministers should know that. That's actually where cabinet ministers who are in charge of the bill speak, and backbenchers when you're in government. When you're in cabinet, you do your speaking, you do your arguing on the Auckland Governance Committee, which I'm on, and in the cabinet itself. What you don't do is go in and argue against or for bits, very bits of your own government's bill, which is actually a consensus bill. And anyone who's been to cabinet knows you do your arguments there and they stay there. And that's one of the things that cabinet does, is creates a discipline. And the discipline means you end up getting an awful lot of things that people don't think you can get because you've actually gone and asked and worked and manoeuvred around to get the right thing. We've got we're going to end up with enough boards to make sure Papa Kura stays as a board and doesn't get swallowed up by Manny Raver. I actually think that's a damn good result.
Thank you, Betty. We had the Honourable John Carter come to Papakura and do the select committee process. He chaired the meetings and we walked in with our banner. He told us we spelled it wrong where it says Save Papakura. He told us we forgot the D where it's Save Papakura. So I need to ask Judith, can we put our D on the sign or can we not?
Can, and the reason is because John Carter has been working with me to make sure that we stay in our own community without getting swallowed up into Manny Raver. That was one of our big concerns because that's what he believes, and he's worked very, very hard to make that happen. That does not happen by one person. You all know that we are surrounded by Franklin, by Manukau. We are a little piece right here in the middle. The awful thing for us would have been is if we didn't get enough boards to make sure that we retained Papakura, otherwise we'd be swallowed up into Mangareva or we'd be in Franklin. And people here wanted to have a voice. It's not necessarily the voice that they wanted, but it is a voice. And that's a hell of a lot better than getting to be swallowed up into Mangareva or to Franklin.
So to add to that answer, is Papakura going to stay independent?
What is?
Independent.
It's going to have a local board.
Yep.
As it's very important that when the submissions go to the local government commission, that people here are arguing for a local board, because I'm going to be pushing for a local board, that we get our own people and that we are part, we have our own area rather than being swallowed up into those other two that surround us.
Thank you.
Voting for the local member, is that local?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Just
it is, yeah,
in
the local area.
Voting local as well.
For
a Papakura member.
Your Papakura, the board is separate from your council member. The council member will be not only this area, but will be taking some part of what else around but you'll have your own.
I got a little bit confused about the student's answer because at the beginning of the answer she said she had won a Papakura board. But then she said later on, and I think this is correct, it certainly is correct, that no boards have been set yet, no boundaries have been set yet. It's all been done by the local government commission. And the local government commission is an independent body, so whatever decisions were made in cabinet are totally irrelevant. Maybe Judith took part in cabinet, but that won't influence the local government commission, and they may decide. I hope they do make Papakura a board, but it's not guaranteed yet.
I think it's important just to fix that area. What we've got here is the local government commission has to take into account the community of interest. If people in Papakura go along to local government commission or submit, say, we don't want to be part of it, that's not going to help. What's really going to help is everybody saying we want our own board, we have our own community of interest, we want to keep our own area, and we accept we are part of the Greater Auckland, but we want to have our own identity. That's what you need to do. And the 20 to 30 boards that we want, that is significantly better for Papakura than the 14 to 20 that the Labor Party, for instance, wants. We've got to have a bigger chance of having our own board. And I can tell you that the ministers involved understand exactly what it is that Papakura wants to do. They want their own board as much as we can.
Well, I think Judith said it all, but her remarks confirm your worst suspicions.
Okay, now what we do is it's your turn. We've tried to start and read the questions that people have been bringing up over all our public meetings and different things that have been going on around the area. So it's only fair that we hand it over. We'll probably do it for half an hour and take questions from you people. So now's your opportunity, and we've got some people who've got some microphones on. Starting on, here's a lady in red here to hand up first. Now, just put the microphone, can I hold it directly horizontal?
Okay. If you only have two questions. Why does the government want to give kudos to white people? Why does the government want to give kudos, the liberators, to white people?
Well, we don't want to give the Nua ranges to Waikato. What we're concerned about are the areas of the dams and those areas. My understanding is absolutely that those were part of the Auckland area. In fact, we had a lot of discussion over the Nua area. Some of that's going to Waikato, some is not. We had the local member, Dr. Paul Hutchison, argue strongly for either all in or all out. And what we ended up with, we had the Mayor of Franklin ringing the Prime Minister and making absolutely plain that the people in his area did not want to be, they want to be partly in and partly out. And so we've got a result which is not going to please everyone there, but actually he was listening to the Mayor.
I think you're talking previously about communities of interest and public around. Pulua people shop and where they go to school. The second question is, what is going to happen to Clevedon?
Well, Clevedon will be part of the Great Auckland area, and it would be, I think many people would think that Clevedon is an area which has a natural affinity to the Papakura area, particularly with the school zoning and the fact that many people in Clevedon come through here to Papakura to work or shop. And that's where I would have thought there was an actual area of interest, actually.
Does Keith or Shane want to comment on those pieces? Okay, head someone down here. Roger.
Thanks.
Roger, can you help with that?
First of all, the board that we, as a local citizen, I think we are very much in the dark as to just what these boards are. I know Judith has given us some insight tonight, but first of all, I'll believe it when we get it. And secondly, I would really be interested in what their responsibilities are going to be and just how much autonomy Papakura will have in a board. That's absolutely vital to us. But having said that, at the moment we are represented at council by one to every 5,000 citizens in our town or in our city. In government, I understand that you, each parliamentarian represents 50,000 people. Under Greater Auckland, each councillor is going to represent approximately 116,000 people. And our fear here is in Papakura that even if we have a board, we're going to have very little say because our chances of having a representative on the major council are almost negative. And under the word consultation, as one who made submissions to both the original commission and the last one under John Carter, I tend to find that consultation is yes, listening, and then justifying the decisions that have been made.
Right. I can give you some details on that, Roger. The local boards in the legislation, they are to have funding for community initiatives, such as decisions about local services and place shaping, and what that actually means in the legislation. It makes it pretty clear that this involves libraries, swimming pools, local economic development, and there is no exhaustive list of the area. Between the 30 local boards, each of those represents an area between 47,000 and 70,000, depending on whether the commission goes for 20 or 30. The bigger the area, the bigger the number of boards, the smaller the number of board members for the local community. So it's actually going to mean that you're going to have a bigger representation. There's no exhaustive list of the boards. The boards will have the power to actually set targeted rates for their specific area. They will have much larger budgets and be better resourced than what was originally planned in the original bill. They will be answerable to the communities they serve, and they must deliver on community-led priorities. And the boards will be able to propose bylaws that make significant changes to their own communities. And from the information I have, those bylaws have to be accepted as long as they're truly local and that they fit within the district scheme plan. So that they will have actually quite significant powers. Much more than, say, a community board does now.
Thank you, Judith. Keith.
Couple of points. There's no guarantee because the wards are going to be multi-member wards, like covering most of South Auckland, one of them probably will be. But there's no guarantee whatsoever that Papakura will have a representative, a person living in Papakura will be on the Auckland Council. No guarantee at all. It may well turn out to be the case, but there's no guarantee about it. The question about the rates that mentioned for the boards, there's reference there to a target rate. That's just for a specific project. It's not the general rate that you now have now. It's just an extra rate for a particular project, and I think you have to get community buy-in by referendum or something to achieve it. So it doesn't really replace the structure you've got now with your own money and your own powers.
Will we still be paying our rates for the city? What if we want to have a sound shelf, for instance?
If your local board decided they wanted to have a new stadium somewhere, they'd have to come to you to say to you, is this what you want, before they try to break it for it.
It's essential that we understand that this model is like the old Roman city. Caesar is in the middle. According to Judith's plans, his name is John Banks. But I said Judith's plans, not my plans. And the smaller areas, such as Papakura, under her model, there probably will be a community board. But you will be supplicants to Caesar. Caesar will tell you what you get. And that is why we did not support this bill, Kia ora.
If there is no government agenda to privatisation, why is David Hawkins on the ATA? Or the mayor of Papakura who sold the water to United Water, who ignored the petition of Papakura residents opposing privatisation?
Well, there is no agenda for privatisation. David Hawkins, of course, George Hawkins' brother, was also mayor of Papakura, as you say. And David Hawkins is someone who has worked for a long time in the metro water area, and there was a decision made by the authority to actually put him in there, or to actually work with people at their councils. I understand they've been working very well with the councils.
Who will let me the
nobody.
Okay, I'll repeat it myself. My name is Kerry Clarkson, resident of Papakura and secretary manager of Papakura Club. Judith, you said something about the Royal Commission who had 3,500 submissions, or many people submitting. My question is, in fact, we had two or three questions, but this one was the first one. How can 3,500 people make submissions on behalf of close to 2 million people in the Greater Auckland area?
You could also say, how can 2,500 people make submissions to select committee hearing? And it's a good point, but actually there is nothing stopping anybody here in Papakura or anywhere for making submissions, and your council certainly did. So they had their say, you had your submissions. And a lot of people who are very happy with the proposal don't make submissions because they're actually very happy. So you could say 3,500 out of 1.4 million, 3,500 did, and 1.4 million people put it. That's what happens. Otherwise, we'd never do it.
Okay. Okay, my second question, of course, is the system seemed to be working under district councils. If it ain't broke, why fix it?
Okay, well, if it was working so well, why did the previous Labor government put in a Royal Commission to sort it out? And in fact, Bill Twyford, who's been referred to tonight, he's actually been the listener just recently, quoted saying what a mess Auckland was in and how they didn't deal with it, they didn't deal with it quickly enough. Actually, it's not brilliant. There are some things that are great, but if you look at transport, that is a major issue here, a major issue through the entire region. And having some coordinated work there is extremely important. I'm one of the people who would have wished that the previous government had not left us with this situation, but they did, and we've had to deal with it.
Okay, just one more.
Shane, can you have your comment on that, please?
That's a very good question. Blurred by the fact that Judith overlooks the fact that they're the government. You can't govern a country by conveniently talking about what happened 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 9 years. You elected Judith, she's your member, she's a senior minister in cabinet. They made the call. We tried to oppose it unsuccessfully. And there are a lot of areas that that changed which we would never have changed. And those are the facts, Judith, strange that they may be to you.
It's right at the beginning you talked about a proposal for an enhanced ARC. I think that getting a council that's in fact an enhanced ARC, dealing better with transport, working in with land use, the growth strategy, etc., etc., that's where we were moving as a community. That could have been achieved without throwing out the councils, without throwing out the community boards. That could be achieved, better coordination for the key things that we need across the region. We didn't need to destroy up Papakura. Thank you, Smith Arthur.
And my last question is, per chance that Len Brown does become the mayor, where do you see Sue Bradford fitting into the picture?
Well, I haven't talked to Sue Bradford about this, so I don't really know. All I know is she's been a great, great MP over the last 10 years.
I'd rather see John Tummy get it than 30 years. In the super city.
And no, she is, and it's true, isn't it, Keith? She is a nice person, and I work with her on a select committee, and we don't normally agree, just like Keith and me, but she is a nice person, and I've always got on well with her. And I'm, you know, I'm not making any judgment call on her on the super city, but I'll say don't write her off, because she is actually a decent person, even though she does want to tell you what to do in your own home.
On a water bridge, she's been dying to ask a question. We'll come over here and then up there.
Thank you. Before I ask the question, I'd just like to make a couple of points to bring people up to speak with some very significant developments. The first thing is about the water. How many of you know that right now the South Australia water is being taken to court for breach of contract and misrepresentation in South Australia, because the allegation is that United Water in New Zealand undercharged in order to overcharge South Australia. We don't want people to pay more here, but the fact of the matter is, if they misrepresented in their contract, then what has been looked at is that contract to be set aside. Now, on the water, the issue here was always about following the South Australian model. And one big water company, vertical integration, which is what they're trying to do right now with water care. And the United Voices, who did not come here for 16,000 Papakura households, that I was on the plum, which is the entire Auckland region. That's what the game plan is. And let me correct about privatisation. It is not about selling the assets, lock, stock and barrel, as was the olden days way. It is about operation and management. But where is the money going? That is the situation. Oh, exactly. The same man, David Hawkins, who has been corporate liaison manager for Water Care, not Metro Water, for Water Care for years. I was one of two people that stood outside his office with a placard back in 1999. He's now been seconded to the Auckland Transitional Authority because you never got to say any of this, but that's all the corporate game plan, okay? And right now, before this house, is a petition calling for a cost-benefit analysis of this whole CCO model, corporate model, because that's what the Royal Commission wants, $28 billion worth of our assets put under. But there's never been a cost-benefit analysis for any of them. The question is, and this is full credit to Sue Bradford, because last week she presented a petition to the House, and I want to know where these MPs stand on it, requesting that the House repeal the Local Government Tamaki Makaurau Reorganisation Act 2009, the one we never had a say in, which set up the Super City, and that lawful due process, as currently outlined in the Local Government Act 2002, Section 24, Schedule 3, including a binding poll, not a referendum, a binding vote, which we should have had and we never got, through which the majority of citizens and ratepayers as electors have the final say on any such reorganisational proposal. I want to know where MPs stand on that, and what I'm suggesting that people do, we back that up with a rates revolt. We pay nothing, nothing to United Water, nothing to Papakura District Council, nothing to the ARC, because we are citizens, not slaves, and we never had our say.
Sue Bradford won't be in Parliament. I do not agree that any citizen can live in a modern city and not pay rates. Now, if you want, no, Pete, you've had your chance. You've had 1,000 petitions to us as MP, so I'm going to take a small part of your life and give you some of your own medicine back. Number one, it is outrageous and quite frankly politically convenient for you to leave people in a meeting with the sense that they can go and have a modern life in a modern city without paying rates. That's absolute poppycock. Secondly, there's no way that Sue Bradford is going to be in Parliament to promote the petition that you've just referred to, and without a champion with a petition like that, it will die. No, so you better find someone else to champion your petition. And the final thing I'd say is that each caucus will determine over the next 18 months to 2 years as to what they're going to do to improve the problem, improve the remedies for the super city problems, because they're going to come thick and fast as the implementation rolls out. And any responsible politician is going to say, okay, this is what we proposed to do in 2011 based on the facts of the implementation. We don't like it. We voted against it. We actually supported the sentiments that you're reflecting, but you're on treacherous ground to imagine you're going to get off the cop, just straight up ill-conceived response. It's going to take 18 months to 2 years, and there will be problems, and I think each party will bring forward a remedy to the next election. But don't go through Auckland saying you can have a freebie with no rates. That's nonsense.
We're outvoted in the Parliament
by the combination
of National and Act driving through this legislation, the two bills that have gone so far and the forthcoming bill. We fight as much as we can with the support of your submissions to the Select Committee to bring about changes,
And we have brought about some changes in terms of the powers of the community boards. We now, as you know, they're vague powers, so we will be, as the process goes along, pushing for the maximum powers and financing for these community boards. We hope that Papatura is one of them. And then, yes, come the next election, we will be campaigning on improvements, a dramatically better structure. I think that's the way we're going.
Actually, I agree with Shane.
I'd like to ask Judith why her and her outsider at the first meeting. I'd like to know why you didn't listen to Papakura at the first meeting we had here when we had a vote of 1,003. Favour of staying as Papakura and not joining the Super City.
Actually, I have to tell you that yes, I did listen. That's one of the reasons why we have got the number of boards.
You were busy talking to one another and studying the book, and I called out and asked Mr. Carter if he was listening to a good speaker who was speaking at the time.
Actually, Mr. Carter was listening. That's one of the reasons that we are trying to get the biggest number of local bodies. Well, look, I don't recall that at all. And frankly, I think that you have you been in to see me about it? No. And Mr. Carter, I know, has been very, very much listening. And he's been listening to Papakura, which is why he was so confident when he spoke to Councillor Mark about it. And one of the concerns is this. Is that yes, there were 1,000 people there, not everybody agreed with you and your views. And I can tell you that one of the very sad things about Papakura in my office is that one of the biggest issues that I get in the office are people complaining that they can't get some things done here, that they want to get this town rejuvenated, that they want to get the main street out of $2 shops, and they actually want to bring business back here. And that's what they want to be focused on. Not on that, unfortunately.
All right. I noticed that you voted that rates would be lower.
That's my understanding, that rates should come down.
Did you say for where we were and we should vote? So.
Well, I don't know about where we were.
Well, now go up.
I'd like to ask about the size of these 20 to 30 proposed local boroughs. Putting aside the two islands, which will have their own boards, that gives an average size of about 55,000. But I think it's common ground with most of us that the real fundamental problem we had in Auckland was the four big cities wasting hundreds of millions of dollars competing with one another and going their own way. And we don't want these cities of about 250,000 that try to pretend that they're 100 miles apart instead of working together. So I'd like an idea of what the upper and lower limits of these 20 to 28 local boroughs will be.
Is that on population size you're asking?
Yes, on population size.
Well, on the calculations given to me on it, that 20 boards would have a number of 70,000 people, that 30 boards, which is where I'm far more than of it, would have 47,000. So what you're talking about are the bigger number of the boards, the more local the local is in those boards.
What's the biggest and smallest they could be?
Well, that's going back to the Local Government Commission, but they are obviously have to take into account community of interest, and they'll be looking at that. And our inclination in the government is between 20 and 30, and we believe at the higher end, so that we get a real community of interest around places like Papakura.
Thank you, Judith. Gary.
Thank you, Mark. I don't know if you need it, but I need this. Years ago, Sir Dunmire Robinson tried to do exactly what you are trying to do now, and he got lambasted by the bloody politicians. He tried his damnedest to do things. But he did it the right way. He asked the people of Auckland what they wanted. He also tried to stop the trams being taken out of the city. You talk about the rail only going part way, the trams were a damn sight better than any bus would ever be. I believe that you people have got a lot to answer for in Wellington. I do not believe that you have the benefits of, or the, even the hindsight of looking after Auckland. History will tell us that you have stuck up completely. You tell us that we have, and Keith mentioned it before, democracy. We have not got democracy. We have never been given the right to vote. And until such times as we are, I believe that you are just trying to make hypocrites of the people of Auckland. Thank you.
Just one question. Do you have a question, Garrett?
Sorry?
Do you have a question?
Why is it that it has taken you over 50 years to get this thing off the drawing board? Because...
Maybe for me, thank you, I'm only 50 years old. I could not do anything when I was a baby. But having said that...
You're a politician.
But having said that, I was not born a politician. I became made that way. Now look, frankly, you actually cottoned on to something, which was that Sir Dunmire Robinson saw a vision of a greater Auckland. We are actually trying to deliver that. He also wanted a properly integrated transport agency and to have public transport. Remember the trains to go round everything? Even I am old enough to remember him wanting to put that forward. And it got stopped because of petty local interests and people who would not see the bigger picture. I wish that he had been successful because then we'd have a train.
But he gave us the
vote.
He gave us the chance to vote.
And he got pushed out on it, that particular issue.
I think it is good to look back 50 years to the 1950s, and there was the same, and 60s, the same sort of contest there between Dunmire Robinson, who's a bit like Mike Lee today, who's promoting public, both then and now leaders of the region, promoting public transport, promoting light rail, in sort of Dunmire Robinson's case, rail and buses and ferries in Mike Lee's case. But the resistance to Saddam then and Mike Lee now is the same. That is rich and powerful interests, mainly people, I think the suburbs of Remuera were mentioned before, who dominated particularly the centre of Auckland and have directed the expenditure into motorways and things for the cars and not for the public transport that we need.
I'd just like to add on to that a little bit, Shane, you don't get off the hook yet. Your government was in government for 9 years, and it took just before the election to bring a Royal Commission to us. Why didn't the government do it earlier?
It's so much easier to talk about 50 years ago. In fact, September 1959, I was born. And that was the year Sir Dunmire became a mayor. However, yes, I've had my birthday in Kaitaia. You missed out all the parlour, crayfish and party. And I had told the National Party the crayfish tails were big and small, but it's customary fisheries, size doesn't matter. Okay, why didn't we get on to it? There came a tipping point, as I recall, and there'll be members in the audience perhaps can correct me, but before 2005, it was evident that the fiefdoms in the four large councils weren't getting along with each other. And quite frankly, every MP gets lobbied by their particular council to ensure that their voice is amplified. And there's one thing we can say that fed to the Labour conception of the problem is that it seemed impossible for the big councils to agree on the big things. And the moment that they came to Wellington, and I can tell you I went to one or three of those meetings, it was difficult for them to be civil to each other in one space. And probably Trevor Mallard, that great peacemaker, who we sent to Auckland to promote a stadium, he reported back and said that, amongst other things, the problems lie in the political culture and the buying personalities at the very top. Now, whilst that wasn't the singular incident, there was a series of incidents to do with transportation, mate, and infrastructure that got the Prime Minister, a former boss, Auntie Helen, to a point, right, let's just go ahead with the Royal Commission. But it's a fair cop. We had 9 years. Why did we not move on it a lot earlier? Given the current problems that the present government is having with their pace, I think any politician that wants to restructure Auckland knows that unless you do it right, it can actually cost you power. And I don't think they're doing it right.
Okay, just before you go, James. So, you could be accused of setting up the future government by doing it so late in your term. Was that the intention?
Now, despite Penny and Judith's best efforts, we believe that we would govern forever. The only problem was that you sure as hell wouldn't believe it.
In today's Blackley County News, the 11th of the editor, and it's referring to Rodney Hyde, has stated that it will be imposed on ratepayers that the reported fees will be $500 to $700 extra. Yeah. Does that come anywhere in the rating system, or is not even on the cards?
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's something in the local paper, isn't it?
Just been written in
the
paper.
Sorry, I don't know. That's
probably the integration costs.
It's very easy to make all sorts of.
How long is that going to be? Bring it out.
I'll read the whole piece if you want. I just read the one paragraph for you. What do you want me to do? It's referring to the student city. That is, they could band together and boycott the establishment fees that Rodney Hyde has stated will be imposed on ratepayers. It has been reported that these fees will be between $500 and $700.
Per ratepayer.
Per ratepayer. This is from Paul Richards from YU. But it's referring to Rodney.
So the accusation is it's going to cost each ratepayer $500 to $700 to set up.
Yeah. Well, that is not.
It's from Rodney Hyde.
It's not the name, not the ball.
From
Oakland. Sorry, I'm sorry, increased establishment fees going on ratepayers. No,
we're being told that no, we will be saving money for this.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to comment on that. I came across the 400 to 500 from, I think, the Royal Commission saying that that's what they thought the setup cost would be per head, or rather per house.
I believe it was $240 million divided by the rate.
Yeah, you still let Shane comment on that, and then we'll go to Steve.
Yeah, no, what you're referring to is that, and it is a bit of a brokers model, what's it finally going to cost of all the transaction costs to bring 1.3 million people together and all the councils? And there was a stand. Actually, I thought it was 256 million. Yes, one figure that was postulated, but you know, in fairness to the architects of that report, they themselves don't know. We don't get regular feedback from Wayne Walden and the other people who have been appointed by the government to run the establishment board. Presumably, they feed through to Rodney. Just changing computer systems is an enormously expensive task. And that's why I think that figure is just one postulation. It could actually be bigger. And who's going to pay for it? Well, come on, folks. John Key's not going to pay $256 million. You're going to pay for it.
Isn't it a bit haphazard to start up Auckland Limited without any idea of the cost?
There's two sets of costs, and they don't seem to have any ideas what either are. First is the transition costs, and that, as Shane said, each council has a very sophisticated computer and network IT, and they're incompatible with each other, so just putting the loads together for a start. So there's going to be big transition costs.
then the ongoing costs after a merger, nobody really knows about those. But if we look at the other restructuring that's been done in New Zealand the past 10-20 years, do you know of any example where these people have come out with less bureaucrats and lower costs? If you know, tell me.
I have several questions, but the first one is the chief one. Do you see any progress on the integrated ticketing system?
There has been progress, and the ARC put out the tenders. And they got a bit of it there, and they accepted the bidder. I've forgotten how much it cost, but it was 100 and something million, I think. But then the government, which has to come forward with the money, because the Auckland Regional Council hasn't got all the money, Stephen Joyce, the Transport Minister, has been sort of holding up. We've been asking a lot of questions about it in Parliament, and the money hasn't come through. But I think that's quite critical, because it's not only getting more buses, getting better trains, but less all the timetables mixed and people can use the same ticket to go from one form of transport to the other, then it's not going to work. Every country overseas has one of these sophisticated systems. And now it's much easier with these swipe cards, and Wellington buses have got these swipe cards in Queensland. It's quite easy. But the money needs to come forward, and unfortunately the transport minister hasn't come up with it yet.
Okay, let me start winding this up. We'll take a couple more questions and then we'll get some closing comments.
Thank you. I heard that shame that the government's been forced into this sort of reaction. But what I want to hear is, what does each MP have as the vision for Greater Auckland in, say, 10 years' time?
Number one, let's base our vision on some facts. This will continue to be our largest and most cosmopolitan metropolitan area. People both domestically and from foreign climes are attracted to Auckland. So we need to have absolutely a safe, secure, trusting type of governance in Auckland. It also has to run, in terms of its economic assets, such as the port, in an economic fashion that generates dividends back to the communities that actually own those assets. And more importantly, it needs an international reputation that enables Auckland to compete with Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne as major magnets of overseas investment and overseas interest, including tourism. Without that, we run the risk of continually selling ourselves short, because this is our major economic service centre. A bit of culture, a bit of economics, and a trusting political governance. That's what I'd like to see.
What I'd like to see is a community of people who actually all share an aim, and that aim is a safer Auckland area, a place where public transport isn't only for a few, because the train happens to run near where you live, a place where people can drive their cars if they wish to and not be stuck in gridlock for hours in some cases, a place where the environment matters, and it matters more than just a slogan, that actually that's taken into account, that people actually make decisions based on the best interests of our community rather than on their own. And actually, I'd like to know that in areas around Papakura, Manurewa, Howick, all those sorts of areas, that people have a community of interest themselves, but they also understand that they are part of the greater whole. And they understand that not being part of that greater whole means that the economic region, the economic wealth of the region cannot be harvested. We have lots of opportunities here to do that and be part of that, and that's so important. That's why I want to see that. I want to see a safer Auckland region, a better, better economy for our Auckland region and a place that we're all proud of. At the same time, we have our own enemies.
Thanks.
I want to say an Auckland where the different communities have a strong feeling that they are communities and are looking after each other, looking after the environment and keeping each other safe. And I think Papakura, judging from the attendance here tonight, does have a strong feeling of community. But I want the city to be one where people think they can come to meetings like this, discuss the issue, and think they are making a difference. Think that what they believe and what they see is going to count. And that is the big problem with what's happening right now, that people are scared that in a year's time, in a meeting like this, or when they go out to vote, what they do won't count because our city has been taken over by forces that are more interested in themselves than interested in the people. Thank you.
So we're going to take three more questions, and then we're going to wind it up for the night because these people have to get home and get on early planes in the morning, so we won't be fair to them. We're going to take one from here, one from there, and one from there. Des.
Thanks, mate. What I'd like to know initially is, are these wards going to have staff?
Yeah, no, I know that that's something that's very much worrying the council people. They will not have staff. They will, however, have a say, and they will be able to. They won't be employed with staff, so they will be able to recruit and get things done, but they will not employ their own staff.
Well, I was talking to a chap who lives in Henson, I think it is, and I was telling him about their spring carnival and jolly derbies and carols in the park and so on, and he says, "Oh, we don't have anything out there like that." So, if the community boards don't have staff, I would think that Harakura would lose all these things as well.
We're not allowed to lose town and county days, come on.
So, Judith, are we still going to have events in Harakura?
Yes, you will have events, and one of the reasons is, of course, is that there will be staff for the council paid for by the council who will be based in areas like Papakura, like Manukau, that they will be actually working with the board. But what they're not going to do is employed by the board.
You'll have to just as
right now, your council staff are employed by the chief executive, not by the council members.
Yeah, the problem is you have to convince the chief executive at Queen Street about your event.
Like, why National got into the powers was because we'd all had a guts of Labour controlling us. Now, like, I thought all our relatives, like grandfathers and fathers and things, went to war. Well, I was brought up being told that mine went to war for freedom and democracy. We're so democracy right now. I'm starting to feel that we're actually voted in a dictatorship. We've got the SAS troops in Afghanistan now fighting for democracy, but where's our own?
Good on you.
And I've supported National, but I'm afraid I can't support it anymore because of what they think.
You're not the only one whose father went to war, so did mine. And frankly, one of the points of a democracy is that you vote in a government and then, unfortunately, the government has to make decisions. And not everybody agrees with all of those decisions. Not even everybody agrees with all those decisions. But actually, unless you want to go down the track of a referendum for every single decision that you might or might not like, that's what the alternative is, or you do get a dictatorship. And frankly, the previous government acknowledged the fact that there was a real issue in Auckland about governance. They started the process. We're having to finish it. And, you know, that's one of the things with democracy. Sometimes you don't get what you want, even when you think you're right. And I feel like that sometimes too, Des.
No pay, no pay.
I just think that if there'd been a vote on, I would have been happy to accept it either way. But when we don't get any say, yes.
David Gibbs.
Minister, I understand the Cabinet are practicing a new song. It's very impressive at this time, but I wonder how it is getting on. And the song is, "We Did It Our Way."
One question here, and the very, very last is over here, colleague.
Just a quick two-part question. First, the key. The Greens keep on about electrifying the railways. Where do you propose to find the electricity to run them? What do you mean out of electricity? And then for Judith, where will this new council be based? Will they be in an existing council office, or will we have another Roman villa as they throw in White Hackery? And tell us that that will not cost us any money.
You find electricity in two ways. One, by saving electricity, and one of the projects we've worked with National Island is insulating people's homes, which saves a lot of electricity, and putting solar water on roofs, heaters on roofs, all that sort of thing saves electricity. The other thing is to expand what is already being done by different power companies, Meridian and whatnot, building huge wind farms, taking advantage of solar power, wave power, tidal power, etc., building the alternative energies that can power something like our electric railway. Good.
Sorry, I want to take a question. Where will the new council be based? Will they have used existing buildings, or will they build their own monolith? Right, but doesn't that seem to have any new building? We already have a council building here. We also have the Accent Centre, which is basically empty apart from the library. There are other buildings already here. Why would anybody want to build another monolith like this? They're going to have branches, they're going to have areas, so it makes perfect sense for them to actually use existing premises. If you think about how long it takes anything for a Resource Management Act, I'll probably be about 85 before there's any new building done.
Look, it's... I think you have to rely on your own activism to ensure that the facilities that are here, because at the end of the day, politicians, by and large, they do respond to pressure. Now, I know Judith has been a bit of an exception.
Oh.
But by and large, they respond to pressure. And just watch Queen Street, that they don't create a new monolith. And if they do, and they want to call it Bankersville, borrow the W out of Wanganui and shove it on the front of his name. Very last question, and then what we're going to do is each one of the politicians' time to wind up with a very short overview. We'll start with Keith, Shane, and then finish with Judith. Not just Keith, we have one more question. Willie.
Judith, I just want to thank you to give the opportunity. 100 years ago, Māori never had an opportunity. Not only did Māori not have an opportunity, Māori were not allowed to have anybody near alcohol. Māori lost a lot of land to the Western Kaumātua. So when I saw the pub sign, I looked at it and thought, Māori shouldn't even be here because it's got nothing. But I want to stand here and speak on behalf of us because we have the Manukau Harbour, we have Pāhuru Inlet, we have Pukekiwi Riki Pass Site. Not only that, we have other pass sites. And not only that, we have a water industry. Without the water, there's no life. So these things are significant, not only to Māori, but to all people. And in the fisheries, we have families. And in the bush life, we have families too, that we have to protect. When you chop a tree down, how much are you destroying? So all I want to ask you is this question. Over the years, Māori have always fought to be who they are. In this area of Papakura, we as Tangata Whenua, we formed 5 iwi groups to come together to go forward, to progress. Since we've done that, they've got rid of Papakura. How do we as Māori still be able to have a voice, to have that recognition? Not only that, I talk about rates could be $1,800 a year for an acre, but in the end I look at gold at $1,800 an ounce. How many ounces goes inside an acre? So when we think of that, do you think that any other New Zealander or anyone in this area will have a right to be here when you're talking international assets
and they've been part of. And all I can say is that the use should belong to ours. We are the kaitiaki that protect to keep what's here for everybody. And what I'm saying to the people is, how can they be safe to say that they're not going to be pushed out and shifted down to another area, and international people coming to our Auckland area with their technology jobs, with their international degrees? And I just know, because Māori have always been in the poverty end of it. Māori have never ever been employed. Māori have always been DPP. Māori has always been on these things, but yet we are a part of asset owners, and these things are being ignored. I just want to ask the question of, how will we have a future as Māori for the next 100 years? Because the leases are all running out. And I just want to know, what do we have for the next 100 years?
Actually, Willie, I share a different vision for Māori than do you, and the reason is because I don't think Māori should be consigned to DPV and every other benefit. I actually see a vision for Māori where every child goes to school, gets a great education and goes home to a loving home. That's where I see. In our correction system at the moment, which is one of my portfolios, 51% of our prison population is Māori, compared to 15% of the general population. That is an utter disgrace. Actually, we have to do a lot better than pandering and thinking about we give someone a token seat or whatever. We've actually got to deal with the real issues around education, social dysfunction, and dealing with that by actually educating our children. Māori children should not have any less of education than any other child in this country. It's their country, just as it is my child's country. Every child deserves a fair go, and I'm not going to go down the path of worrying that Māori are always going to be on the DPB, because I know many Māori are not. They have far more aspiration than that, and I'm with them.
I think the answer is in some ways in this room. That is, if we're to protect our community assets from foreign takeover, including Māori assets, it needs to be an alliance between Māori, and you talk about the kaitiaki role, looking after the role, people such as are in this, engaged citizens such as are in this room, and politicians such as Green Party politicians such as myself. If we work together, we can stop this takeover, and we can stop the structures coming in that are standing in our way.
Shane. Tēnā koe, Willi, me o kōrero whakārārangi a tātou e tēnei kō. Thank you for raising those points. We've got a long way to go. And I endorse part of what the other two speakers have said. I've had 7 children of my own. I've been a participant on boards of trustees, etc., and there's a great amount of work to do. I do think, though, that the super city, depicted as the model is in my view, will have no other option but to create an avenue, a huarahi, that brings the Māori influence into the council. Now, it won't be, obviously, at the level that suited our party or indeed suits the various iwis, but I think we've got to be confident that if we go forward, there is a place for Māori, but the reality of what is that most Māori business should stay in the Māori world. I'm not in agreement that we should bring our iwi and Māori business and thrust it on other fellow New Zealanders. That's our business. And as long as we take responsibility to find remedies for our own dramas, then we don't alienate our pākehā for tauiwi natives. So, by all means, amplify our Māori kaupapa to the new council, and the new council is going to have to create an avenue, or they're going to be in so much drama when it gets to resource management and environment, the budget will just go up and up and up because of litigation. But rule number one, if we want rangatiratanga, brother, it has to be on the kitchen table, in our hearts, in our prayers for every single Māori family. We can't look anywhere else at the end of the day other than ourselves. Kia ora tanga.
So I'm going to ask each one of the MPs to do a quick overview on their fairly. And closing comments. And I'm going to start with Keith, Shane, and finish with Judith. So Keith, would you like to...
I'd like to thank you all, because this is the heart of our democracy. People coming out, taking the effort to come out at night, listening to sometimes boring MPs, etc. But this is what it's about, to try and bring about change. So I've been listening very closely to your feelings here tonight. I'll take that back to the Green Caucus, and we'll continue the struggle alongside Labor against the super city plan, moderating it at least as much as we can possible, as we can, given we're outvoted by National Enactment in the Parliament. But with your support, hopefully we'll make some progress. Thank you.
First of all, I was ringing. Phil Pfeiffer is away. I think in Pai Kobe in the Channel Islands. And actually, I'm going back to Kai Tai, because one of our leaders up there, Billy Servoy, who was our county chairman for 38 years, and he's passed away in his 80s. But listening to you this evening, I would exhort you to continue your organisation, your organised opposition, and try at least to ensure that Papakura's identity and its appeal is given an institutional expression through at least a well-run and vibrant community board. And remember, Rodney Hyde is the Minister of Local Government, and whilst John Carter may have been here, the decisions have predominantly been promoted by Rodney and supported by National. And when he was talking about cutting the council district of Rodney in half, it wasn't the geography I had in mind, but it was the body of Rodney.
Most of the people here who've been involved with Save Papakura, you're very much opposed to Super City, and I actually very much respect the fact that you have been a very good audience and you've asked your questions in a very decent way. I'm pleased to be invited tonight because the previous meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago I didn't get an invitation to. So if you were wondering why I wasn't there, that's why. Can I also thank the council for the very good debate as well that we have at various stages. I work very well with many members of the council, and I think the fact is that we can't always get what we want, but the first thing we've got to be getting right now is we've got to get that board for Papakura. And I would say to you, please get submissions in. I'm going to be putting out my comments newsletter asking people to get submissions in, get the idea around that we need to have that community. Good, because it's a very close-knit community and we don't want to lose it because of finding a fight that's already happened. It's incredibly important that we do it. So thanks for being here, thanks for being a great audience, and I know that those who are here for the Super City, but I do appreciate the fact that you've given me a fair hearing, so thank you very much. I forgot to acknowledge my colleague, parliamentary colleague John Bull, Shane Jones and Keith Locke, who have been good sports as well.
Well, on behalf of everybody here tonight, I'd like to thank Judith, Shane and Keith for being so willing to take part in tonight's debate, and for Shane for standing in that late notice. I think it's been very entertaining. And we've got a small appreciation for each of you.
Getting late.
Run and tell him.
God, I can't tell you. Well, I was not going to say much tonight. I was keeping the background, but Patricia said one thing that time for your home. And I want to put special thanks to our three colleagues over here tonight, the Honourable Shane Jones. Of course, our Minister and MP, we've had a very honourable Judith Collins and Keith Locke. Really appreciate it coming out tonight. I also like to thank two special people here tonight, Mark and Caroline, for working behind the scenes and putting this great event together with our SafePaperGrid.com guys. Over the last 3 or 4 months, out of our company meeting, over 1,000 people turned out. They come together for us to show that they care about them. It's always hard to not get a bit of an antler in your throat and a bit of a tear in your eye because they've done fantastic work behind the scenes, and I think they really deserve what they've come up with tonight. But once again, Caroline, you've done a fantastic job of putting together tonight. I think very fair, very methodical. I don't think there's anything untoward, and I think you've done a marvellous job. So once again, Caroline, fantastic work. Audience, thanks for turning out to have a career. So, kena koutou, kena koutou, kena koutou, kena koutou.
Okay, guys, thank you very much for coming. Thanks for being so passionate about your community. But before you go, remember these three people did not have to be here tonight. And that's Judith, Keith and Shane. Come out and they've got to get up early in the morning and go where they've got to go. Can we have a round of applause for them, please?
Night off before I go on tonight's trip, so that's fine. you enjoy tonight?
Sorry?
Did you enjoy tonight?
Yes. It was good except for some of the rude people down the back there that continued like there's heard and his mate did chatter through the whole thing. Why don't they leave it for that one? Some people just don't know what you're doing.